weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, good afternoon there. We meet again.
Well, we do, and good thing we're inside because it's awful cold outside.
Is it? Like as usual, I haven't been out lately.
Well, like I was telling you earlier, it even snowed a few flakes on me when I was out this morning on Melrose Road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not far from town at all.
No, big white things were hitting the windshield during the rainstorm. I thought, those are big raindrops. And then they ain't raindrops, that's snowdrops.
Yikes, that's too close to home.
Oh, yeah. And so it must be piling up in the Cascades.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No, Callahan's, I heard, had got snow.
Oh, yeah. The sun was out about a half an hour ago, and I was looking at them from my nursery, and they got snow over the tops.
Oh, do they?
Oh, yeah, there's snow sitting on the ground there. So, anyway, thank you for listening today. This is the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. So if you have a question, it's a call-in show. I'll talk about some stuff and hopefully get you interested. And then you say, hey, I got a problem. And then you just call 673-4464. That's 673-4464. 4464. Any questions, fair game, as long as it's about gardens, okay? No politics today, none of that stuff. it's too dangerous.
Speaking of which, I wonder if our governor thinks we're in an extreme drought yet.
Hopefully, yes.
That's it for politics.
Okay, you're cut off. But just some basic stuff today that I've already covered in the past probably 250 times, and you're tired of hearing me saying it, but I'm going to say it again because it's the appropriate time of year to think about pruning and shaping and looking at stuff that's damaged that you need to, trim up in your yard. But, pruning and shaping shrubs and trees is not just a once-a-year process. For the best health of any plant, pruning is an ongoing process when it ever is needed. And many shrubs grow fast in the spring, and they always need a little touch-up during the spring or the summer, or they get out of hand and they start looking a little wild, and then
Shaggy.
you kind of ignore them and say, well, I'll get that in the fall. Well, you don't have to wait till the fall. I mean, it's the new growth. It's not going to hurt anything just to snip it off and like a shrub of some sort that's got 25 wild branches headed in 10 different directions and you don't like it, go ahead and cut it. It doesn't even feel it. It's like cutting your fingernails, okay? So you're good. And it's nothing grows uniformly. shrubs don't grow uniformly. Trees don't grow uniformly. In other words, because one branch grows 6 inches, another one might grow 18 inches. So cut the 18-inch guy back to 4 inches and kind of keep him neat and clean. And then you have a better-looking yard. You have a better-looking mm-hmm. shrub, and it's actually more healthy that way. Yeah. And, it's just the way they are. It depends on how they feel, I guess. I don't know. But if they're lopsided and they look out of balance, you can quickly, easily, before they get really whacked out, go ahead and trim them. Keep them in shape, and you'll
even it up a bit.
Even it up, yeah. It's like when you get a haircut, you don't leave the top, growing and mm-hmm. just shave the sides. Well, some people do.
I was going to say.
I've seen that lately, Oh, gosh, yeah.
Well, it was Halloween.
It's true, but this is prior to Halloween that I'm speaking about. But, there's a lot of shrubs that, grow really slow, and you might not prune them except every 2 years or 3 years because they grow so slowly. But then there's some that are really, just whoop, grow a foot, 2 feet, and they're all, it doesn't look good. So get them done. No pain to the plant, that's no problem there. And then maybe you're looking at your trees and there's a tree branch hanging and you have to duck to walk by or get slammed in the forehead with this
Ouch.
Branch,
Yeah.
And I've done that. It's happened to me on several thousand occasions. But prune it. take it off. It doesn't matter. If it's a small branch, you know, like an inch diameter or maybe 2-inch diameter, but there's so much weight on the leaves that, you know, a year ago it wasn't hanging down at eye level, but since it's grown all last year and is growing this year and leafing out and leafed out, you know, it has extra weight. So consequently, the branch sags another, mm-hmm. you know, 2 to 4 or 6 inches, whatever the type of tree is. You don't have to duck, cut it. It's okay. And, you know, and besides, it'll force growth somewhere else when you cut it. But don't get smacked in the forehead.
Oh, that hurts, especially yeah. when it's cold and
yeah,
wet.
Yeah, it does. And I've been smacked a lot with tree branches over my career, ugh. You know. Or, you know, if you have a small tree like a Japanese maple, and they're notorious for this, it has a way when it grows that it has too many cross branches. In other words, the outside is beautiful, it's lush, it's full, you know, if it's a red leaf, it's gorgeous, and but when you part the branches a little bit and kind of look to the interior of the tree, you see all these little branches that are crossed over each other. Mm. Well, if you don't do something to them, in time, it's going to cause a problem for the tree. One of those branches is going to die. And so if you, as the leaves fall off, you can really see the branching structure. Go ahead and thin it out a little bit. And when you thin it out and make it look more exotic, if you will, you'll also be opening it up for air circulation in next spring and summer for sun to circulate evenly through the entire tree, which makes it not only is it pretty again, but it's also more healthy. It doesn't yeah. have a place for every bug or virus to live and eat the thing as you. And you can't see those bugs if you don't prune it. And you can't see the virus unless you thin it out.
It's got a big book cover.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's a healthy thing. It's like you don't let your fingernails grow an inch long. I mean, they hurt, they get in the way, and it doesn't do you any good. But now heavy pruning, like if you have to remove 50% of the branches off a shrub or even a tree, that should be done in the dormant season. In dormant season, let's say December and January, or November to February would be the dormant season. When all the leaves have dropped off a deciduous tree, that way you can see the branching pattern. And if you can't do it yourself, there's quite a few tree surgeons around, and they do a good job for the most part. I mean, I've used several different ones at several different times, you know, whoever was available. And they all do a good job. You tell them, hey, I want it to look like this. I want it to be opened up. I want it I want it, you know, 10 feet shorter and then opened up and thinned out so I have space between the branches. And they do that. They do a good job that way. They'll listen to you.
Well, that's good to know.
And they may have some suggestions. And if you say, well, I want this, this, and this. And I say, well, if you do that, this may happen or that may happen, but we can do this alternative cut, and it'll be better off for the tree. And they've only done, you know, 10,000 trees in their life,
yes,
so
yes.
they know how the tree is going to react. Go ahead and listen to them and take their advice. It's okay.
Yeah, don't tell them to put it somewhere.
Right. Don't, you know, I'll put it on the burn pile. And once you've done, now this goes to fruit trees I'm going to speak about now.
Okay.
And once you've done like a heavy fruit tree pruning, in other words, there's a fruit tree that's, 20 feet tall, and the fruit is at the 18-foot level, and you don't have a 23-foot ladder to go and grab the fruit, so most of the fruit falls off and rots. You want that to be a more manageable tree. You want to get it down to where you can actually pick the fruit, and on a smaller ladder, a 10-foot ladder or something like that, it's accessible. And so if you have an overgrown fruit tree, cut that puppy down a long ways to where you can actually reach it. And when you cut it down, you cut the bigger branches off, then you can thin out what's left and have fruit where it's accessible, and if you have to spray the tree, you can spray it without big heavy machinery, and keep it that way. Once you do it, keep it that way. Anything that goes up, it's going to grow up. I mean, that's mm-hmm. what they do. But then it's not usable for the homeowner.
Yeah. You probably have a lot more fruit, too.
Oh, yeah. More fruit. And and I'll tell you a story about that in a minute.
Alrighty.
On what I did. But if you keep on top of it and do it every winter or every other winter at the latest, you're going to have a manageable fruit tree. You're going to have something that you can actually enjoy. And it, like I say, doesn't hurt the tree at a bit. And fruit trees are more productive when pruned, and you get more fruit and better fruit. Mm-hmm. Because you've got air circulation, you've got sunlight circulation, so everything ripens on a more even basis. And the bugs and the viruses, they like shade, they like cool, they like no sun because it cooks them. They want so if you got a fruit tree that's just loaded with fruit and it's 100 branches on it and it's
perfect
really
for
shady.
Bugs.
Yeah, the bugs get in there and they'll destroy your tree eventually, but they eat the fruit for sure. Real cool.
Yeah.
Years ago, at my nursery, there was a small orchard where my retail building now sits. And they were what I was just talking about, 20 foot tall with the fruit at the top and unusable. So I said, and I did it at the wrong time of year. I didn't care. I was tired of looking at it. So I went and I cut it down to about 5 feet tall.
Oh, geez.
Eyeball high.
Yeah.
Eyeball high. And there were a few lateral branches that were, horizontal type branches. Mm. And I left the horizontal ones, but I pruned all the short branches down a bit. So everything was at eyeball high or, very similar. And it looked kind of weird at first, especially to people that saw it. What'd you do to that tree, man?
Did you kill it?
Yeah, you killed a tree, didn't you? No. But what happened, the benefit from that, is when it fruited the next year, all the fruit was right along these lateral branches, these horizontal branches. So the apples were right there, like I say, at eye level, pick. And if I had to spray it, it was easy to spray. Yeah. It was easy to take care of. And when it leafed out, it looked like some beautiful, exotic, Asian tree or something.
Nice.
It belonged in a Japanese garden.
Yeah.
And I did that to about three of the trees. And they were very productive after that, and I just kept it that size.
Mm-hmm.
So, because there's always new branches going to try to shoot up and go straight up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, cut them puppies down,
Cut those suckers off.
Exactly. That's what they are, suckers. And leave the branches that were the bigger, heavier fruit-bearing ones, leave them alone. Just cut them minimally so that you have good fruit production that following year. It's that simple. But people think... Many, many people think that, if I cut the tree like that, I'll kill it. No, you won't. Trust me, you won't. if you have two or three trees, try one and see what happens. And then you'll be doing the others the following year.
Shall we take a break?
We'll take a break.
All right. And we'll be back with more Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show and your phone call.
Oh, yeah, 673-4464. If you have a question, please call.
News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. On News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All righty, we do have a phone call. Want to go right to that?
Yep.
All right. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hello.
Yes, my name is Kevin. I have a question about my rhododendrons.
Yes. Sure, ask it. What is it?
Go ahead.
Well, they're getting kind of bushy, and when is the best time to trim them? And... just kind of how you take a lot of the leaves off, or just kind of they're kind of crowding the window. So is there a certain arch to it, or you just kind of get them the way you want them?
Well, when I prune mine, I get them the way I want them. And the way I do that is if there's a lot of branches, you can cut some of the interior branches and kind of thin it out so you can see through the plant a little bit.
Exactly.
If it's, very full. And then if it's too high, you can go ahead and cut them down to whatever height that you'd like. But this time of year, there are bloom buds on the ends of all the branches. And if you cut too many of those off, then you don't have any blooms for this next spring. The proper time, I mean, you can prune them now. Don't you won't kill the plant. But the proper time to prune and preserve bloom buds is after they've bloomed in the spring. They're all done blooming. The flowers are kind of, you know, over their thing, and they're starting to look kind of deflated. And that's when you can do heavy pruning, and that won't affect the next year's blooming period. You get what I'm saying?
Okay. Yeah, exactly. So maybe you reach in there and get some of the cross branches, like pretty much anything else.
Right,
and
right.
And then...
Right.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much.
You got it. Well, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
And good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Yes. Hi, Mike. I would like to know if you had any experience or thought anything about a worm farm. Is that a good way to... Is that a good way to fertilize your plants, or is it more labor intensive than necessary?
Oh, is this a set up question? Because I had a worm farm at one time. No.
Oh, you did?
I did, yeah. I had about 20 billion of them, I think. But at any rate, what they do is they manufacture good soil. And they aerate it. You feed them manure of some sort, and then they eat that manure and turn it into the best compost in the world. And they will enhance your garden if you put them around in your garden or your plant beds or things like that. They will, in fact, generate top quality soil, and your plants will be healthier, and they will multiply and be happy. But what I would do if I were you is maybe go to the library and get a book on worm farming and see what they have to say. I gave you the fast and furious definition of it, but there's a lot more to it. I did it for a couple of years, and finally I had to let all mine go for personal reasons, because the guy I was selling it to, the organization I was selling the worms to, went out of business, so we had no buyer after 2 years. But anyway,
so
they're good.
Where do you get the manure for the worms?
Well, you know, there was a dairy farm about 3 miles from my place, and we could get it there, or the auction yard. You know, it's I think even the co-op out in Wilbur might have some that, you know, you can get a couple of scoops in a pickup and put it on the top of the worm beds, and they come up and eat it like it's Thanksgiving.
All right. Well, thank you very much. That's very helpful. I appreciate it.
You're sure welcome. Thank you for the call. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you. Well, I like that. Two calls in a row.
Yeah, that hasn't happened in a long time. Thanks for the calls, guys. I appreciate it.
And a reminder, the phone number.
Oh, yeah, 673-4464. So there you go. But in the earlier segment, I was speaking about the you know, the pruning of fruit trees and shrubs and things like that. And I've said this a few hundred times over the years, too. You can drive around Douglas County and see how many commercial orchards we have, and you can see some very well-pruned trees this time of year. Now, these are commercial orchards. They're part of the farming experience and profitability, and if they didn't prune those trees, they would not have the fruit, the quality, or the numbers or the amount that they need to sell on the marketplace during the summer. So if you, like, out at River Forks Park area and Hessness Landing, there's quite a few orchards around. There's a lot around Winston and Dillard, and drive around and see how those fruit trees are pruned, and you'll get the idea. Now, they keep them a little bit taller than what I was speaking about, but they have commercial ladders and all that kind of stuff, and they've got people who are very experienced in it, but they cut them and they look like, wow, did you destroy that tree? No, because as soon as they start growing again, you see the abundance of fruit that comes out. If you know where Brosai Orchards is, just right outside of Winston, go down. He has several different orchards of, he's got cherries, pears, apples, plums on both sides of the road. And that's a prime example very close at hand that you can see how the pruning is done. So it's a good picture. You know, you see it and you go, I know. Now I see what the guy's talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
Go for it.
Yeah.
And you'll be pleased with the result. So that's how I do it. And because you're gonna increase your volume like, you know, 50 or 60%. That's all there is to it.
Mm.
So that's a good starting place. And if that doesn't work for you, there are books like at the box stores, Home Depot and those places that have books on pruning with pictures as before and after. And that also gives you a good idea.
Good afternoon. You're on the air with Mike Winters.
Hey, guys. Back in August, I had a volunteer tomato come on. And as you know, at that time of the year, it was just hot, hot, hot. And most of my other stuff kind of didn't make it.
Uh-huh.
But this volunteer tomato did. And now, 2 months later, 2.5 months later, I have lots of green tomatoes, and they're all in perfect size. And in the past, I've picked them and let them ripen in a paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
But I have so many. Is there a way to do it in waves so that you get, you know, a handful to come on now and a handful to come on next week? And a week after that, is there a way to do that?
You know, you got me stumped, partner. I don't know. What I would do, my first thing would be put them on the windowsill and see what happens. and they will eventually ripen if it's warm in the house, say. And fried green tomato is pretty good if you ever had one. But
Green tomato pie. Yeah.
But I can't answer that at all.
Okay. Well, worst case is let them all come on and then boil them down and make a sauce. So
there you go. Or some tomato juice.
Okay.
How's that?
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for the call. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And the phone number again, Mike?
673-4464 if you want to talk and have a question. And sometimes I can even answer them.
I hadn't thought about that before, the question that he was asking.
Yeah.
I
would like to know what kind of tomato that was
that
produced so late, because it was just last week we were still picking red tomatoes off our tomatoes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was still like summer.
Yeah, and we've been having fresh tomatoes, gosh, for months now. I mean, and there's still some hanging on the vines out there.
So, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, you often forget how warm it was a week ago.
Exactly.
When it's colder than you know what outside now.
Yes. Yes, it is. Oh, gosh. Yeah, anyway, the apple trees that I want to speak about, apples and apple varieties. I ran across an article that intrigued me. And, you know, I looked at apples and, you know, I like the one that tastes pretty good. And this one is real sweet. And this one's kind of hard and crisp. And this one's a little soft and mushy. You know, and half the time I don't even know the names of the apples I'm eating.
There's too many of them.
Unless they got a little sticky tag on them. But most apple varieties can be eaten, of course. But there are some that are best for baking. And then I thought, I thought any apple was good for baking. But according to...
Granny Smith is probably one of the tops.
Well, it is. It's one of the tops. But apples are plentiful this time of year, wherever you look, whatever store, you know. They got them, and if you want a crunchy and sweet apple, that's a good baker. Crunchy apples seem to be the best for baking. In other words, when you bite into them, they mm-hmm. snap and they pop. You know, they're like a little bit harder than, you know, very, very solid apple.
Yeah, and not squishy.
Yeah, and according to this article I was reading, yeah. those are the best for baking.
Oh,
because
okay.
if you use an apple that's kind of soft and you try to bake a pie with it, what happens is the heat from the oven will practically melt it into soup. Whereas
gross.
Whereas the crunchy hard ones, they do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, flavorful and stay
exactly,
where they're supposed to.
Exactly, and they don't lose any of their
taste.
Taste and you can add, they're not crunchy anymore, but they're solid.
Mm-hmm.
They're solid soft. How's that? That if that makes any sense.
Oh yeah, I get it.
So, and like I say, the soft ones turn to mush when you bake them.
Oh,
so,
that just sounds gross.
But here's some good ones. They said there was a big long list, but I only took a few. That grow here. Golden Delicious is a good baker. The Fuji apple is a good baker. Honey Crisp, Braeburn, mm-hmm. Pink Lady, those are just some of the better ones that was at the top of the list for, you know, baking apple pies or apple fritters or whatever other things you can bake with them. And then if you like the, and that's the sweet ones. Now, if you like the crunchy tart ones that are not as sweet, they're tart.
Oh, you know, that's a good word for it.
Yeah, I don't mind. I eat a tart apple. It's okay. But you can bake with Jonna Gold or Empire, Granny Smith. You mentioned that. That's a very popular baking apple. And Northern Spy. And there were more to the list, but those are the kinds of apples you'll find around here for sale, apple trees, mm-hmm. for sale in different nurseries and stuff like that. They're the old-timers, been around a while, and most people recognize the name.
Yeah, the more plentiful.
yeah. And but the other, you know, like I say, there was probably 30-some-odd apples that fell under each of these categories. And
jeez.
I thought, I've never had one of those and never sold one of those. I don't know what it looks like, in fact, you know, so why talk about it? Now, you know, the tender and sweet apples, you know, those that are just not quite soft, but almost, you know, they're the best for eating off the tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't break a tooth that way.
Yeah.
But you can make applesauce or apple butter, those kinds of things. And so Granny Smith would be one, and Red Delicious. And there's one called Jonamac, and it's Jonamac. I never heard of it, but I thought it was an interesting name, so I threw it in the pot there.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is to eat the ones you want to eat and bake all the others. You know, that's as simple as it gets.
Yeah,
you know?
When in doubt, bake them.
Bake them all, you know, or eat them all, whatever, whatever you like.
We got to take a break.
Okay, we'll be back.
All right, with more Apple Talk.
Apple Talk? I don't know. Maybe I'll go to Paris.
There's a joke here, but I got to leave it alone.
Don't. This is a radio show.
News Radio, 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Well, hello there. We're back with more of Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show here.
And I've been talking about apple pies.
and making me hungry.
And different apples and pruning and how to increase your fruit production. And, you know, I'm not a pie baker.
They have the best smell, don't they?
Oh, yeah. You go into one of these bakeries and cooking a lot of pies, and you go, what is
mama
that?
Mamma mia.
I like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've never baked a pie in my life. My dad used to bake pies. My mom used to bake pies, but they never showed me.
They never passed it along.
No. And I'm glad they didn't, because it looked like too much work.
It is. It really is. I tried. Failed.
But, you know, I do enjoy a good apple pie. It's you know, then, and like I said, I was there are probably many different recipes out mm-hmm. there, and there's probably some people shaking their heads and saying, that guy doesn't know anything about apple pies. But anyway, but now I'm going to switch to trees here for a little while, about bare root trees, because bare root tree season, I'm going to start in another month or so when all the leaves finally drop off and the trees are without leaves. They're fully dormant, and then you can dig them. And there's no muss, no fuss, and it's a good time to do that. And I usually buy them in January and February, and when it comes to fruit trees, and I'm buying fruit trees and shade trees and flowering trees, the whole scope there. But I only choose like four or five popular varieties, like of apples or cherries or something like that. Something that people know about, that they see in the store, that they've tasted, they like it, or it looks good.
Yep.
And so you stick to those kind. I stick to those kinds of varieties. And once in a while, I'll throw in something exotic, that nobody knows about, and say, hey, what's that? That's a such and such a cherry, and it does this, this, and this, and and you sell them. But, usually, like I say, four or five of the popular varieties, but the nursery I buy them from, he grows these, and he's got, 80 acres or something of just baby fruit trees and shade trees and stuff like that. It's up a little bit north of Eugene, I've been dealing with them since I was, probably almost 50 years I've been dealing with them.
Jeez, you were just a kid.
I was just a kid, yeah. But I was just counting some of the varieties of apples just in his small brochure.
Uh-huh.
And he had 37 varieties of apples, different types of apples. Some I went, I never even heard of that.
That's a plethora.
That's a plethora, yeah. That's a plethora and a half. But I was thinking, if I bought 10 of each type, I'd have 370 apples in stock.
Good Lord.
It'd take me 10 years to sell all those, I think. And
just plant them down there in your gully.
Yeah, right. And then, of course, the plant scientists, the mad hatters that live in greenhouses, they're inventing additional varieties all the time. They go, let's try this and try that. And you can see an apple tree, and all of a sudden, say all the apples are red, and there's a kind of a greenish yellow one on one of the branches, and you go, what the heck's that? And it's you can't identify it, so they'll take a cutting off that branch and graft it to a root system and grow like a mother tree, if you will. And then they can take cuttings off of that and graft them to other root systems. And then pretty soon you've got a whole, they name it the George Washington apple or something like that.
And they're all yellow or
they're all yellow or something, yellow green or whatever.
Yeah.
And they create new varieties all the time. So there's always somebody doing things like that. And they don't just do it to apples. They do it to all fruit trees.
Yeah.
They do it to shade trees. They do it to shrubs, rhodies, azaleas. Anything you can think of, there's always somebody out there trying to make a different shrub. And as long as
bigger, better, or smaller.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All of that. And as long as the genetics are similar, they take. You get failures too. I've grafted Japanese maples. When your friend and I grafted 3,000 Japanese maples.
Wow.
And and you do it with very sharp razor type knives. You ought to see in our fingertips.
Oh, my God. Wow.
One little slip and go, another one.
Peroxide.
And you try not to bleed on the plant,
A little extra juice.
Yeah, but we did, and it's a lot of work. And you really got to love it to do it. So, but that's what you're looking at in the nursery industry. And that's just one nursery I've been going to since I began my professional career, if you will. But there, the Willamette Valley, the farther you get up into the Willamette Valley, there are more and bigger nurseries that produce just acres and acres, hundreds of acres of things. But they've been in business since 1876 or something like that, and their great-great-grandfather started
since
it.
Since the Oregon Trail was there.
Exactly. As soon as they got over, the first pioneers got over here and started homesteading, they're starting to plant fruit trees. That was a staple in their life.
It's a good thing they did.
Yes. But this fall, with all the rain we've had here recently, I don't know if I'd go out and plant anything, but I always promote fall planting. And But like I say, as I see these inches of rain falling now, I'd hold off for a while and let the excess water drain down into the aquifer for a few days and wait for, oh gosh, maybe 4 or 5 days without any rain and do a dig a test hole. And if it doesn't fill up with water, it'd be good to go ahead and
good
plant.
Good to go.
Good to go, yeah. And usually like... from mid-January to about mid-March seems to be like the prime time for bare root trees, whether they're shade, flowering, or fruit. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, let the ground soak it all up so that when you do plant them, the ground is easy to dig. You can amend it with whatever soils you want and plant it and then forget it till about May. And don't water it and let it root in and let it, yeah, you know, take that natural moisture and establish itself. And then, you know, like I say, it depends on the weather, but maybe mid-May or so, that's when you begin to water, say, once or twice a month. That's all that's necessary the first year. And then after that, they're pretty much on their own.
On their own, yeah. Yeah.
And you'll note, again, the commercial orchards we have around here. If you went out to again to River Forks area and those kinds of areas, when they're putting in a new orchard, they water that first year only, and after that they remove all the irrigation because it's on the surface irrigation. They take it out and they move it to some other place. They don't continually water, because the tree, the reason it sets fruit is because it's a little bit stressed. And so consequently, it wants to reproduce itself. And so consequently, you get apples or cherries or prunes or plums or whatever you're
early. Huh?
Yeah. And it does a much better job of production that way.
Oh,
you keep watering it. Not only do you rot the roots, but the fruit has no incentive to grow because life is too good. We got all the water we need. Why should we? And
it's kind of like the government feeding us unemployment.
There you go. Too bad I can't draw it.
Yeah, me too. I shouldn't have said that.
Too bad I got a job, huh?
No, I didn't mean it that way. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, but, you know when you have too much water, when you're going to plant a bare root tree or any tree or shrub, and you dig into the soil about, you know, say 12 to 18 inches and water is running into it, you know that's not the time to plant it. It's too wet. It'll rot. Okay. So you let it set, you let it wait till it drains out so there's not a pool of water, and that's the time you want to plant. That's when it will be most receptive. And if your ground is topsoil and drains quickly, no problem there. But most of Douglas County is not topsoil. It's clay.
Clay.
Which does not drain readily. Clay and some shale mixed.
That's a great combo.
And I know. But there are a few fortunate people that have river bottom land and all that. So they have a much easier time with that kind of thing. So, and anyway, if you haven't, you should turn off your sprinklers if you've forgotten that they're on.
Yeah, I still see those going.
I know. I noticed. That's why I said that. Yeah. I noticed a few, and I think, why do they have that sprinkler on?
I know. I'm going, what the?
It's raining. It's wet. It's cold. So if you've forgotten, and it's easy to forget if you got an automatic system, you know, go in there and push the off switch, okay? Save yourself some bucks.
Oh, well, God. On that note, I suppose we should take another break.
Okay, if you say so. You're running the board. I'm
What's our phone number there, Mike?
673-4464.
There you go. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
4:52, and we still have a few minutes left for your phone call on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show.
Yes, we do. Now, I can't run the board, so you might call, but I can't hear you. How's that? But my buddy's got an appointment here real quick. So anyway, I've been talking about the rain and fruit trees and planting in pools of water. Those are all the things you shouldn't do. And please turn off your sprinkler systems. But one good thing about this rain is it will show you any low spots in your landscape. Give you a good idea about drainage in your yard, because in the last couple of days we've had several inches of rain. Today was really coming down, and we've got more yet to come. So if you see pools of water, you'll know that, well, you can ignore them and it doesn't matter, or you can say, well, I have to raise the grade in that section of the lawn and make sure that it's draining away from the foundation of the house, or it's not pooling amongst my shrubs or my fruit trees or something like that. But with standing water, you can say, well, I see the low spots, I'm going to fix them. And then, you know, when it dries out next spring, you can jump right on it and do it. Another easy winter project is to make a compost pile. And I know I've spoken about compost piles, but with all the leaves falling down, you've got a perfect opportunity. And leaves are the primary natural product for that pile. Because when they disintegrate, they turn into the finest soil. You can't even buy it. You know, pick a spot in your yard, build a box, or just make a pile for leaves, grass clippings, coffee grounds, eggshells, a lot of calcium in eggshells, and let them disintegrate. Let them do their natural rotting process. And the compost that you produce is a natural fertilizer. And a lot of folks are concerned about commercial fertilizers and what they do to the ground and what they will produce in fruit and vegetables. But the natural compost is a nutritious material that will actually feed the plants, not as much as a commercial, but over the years as you build this up in your garden area, it's going to have a significant impact on whatever you're growing, be it grass or shrubs or vegetables. It doesn't matter. But they are filled with nutrition, compost. And you know when it's done, you got a pile, say your pile, you've been throwing leaves on this pile and grass clippings for, you know, 6 months or whatever, and it's, say, 3 or 4 feet tall and 4 or 5 feet in diameter. You take a pitchfork and you get down into the bottom of that pile and you take the fresh leaves off and you can see what's happening. And at that point, you want to turn it. You want to take the stuff on the bottom and throw it on the top and let it settle. And then by doing that, you put the weight of that good stuff is pushing the ungenerated leaves down deeper into the pile, and there'll be a quicker decomposition of those leaves, and they'll be compost before you know it. We have been doing that for 20 years at the nursery, at least, from all of our maintenance accounts, landscape maintenance accounts that we do, and rather than go to the dump, the landfill, if you will. Rather, we have a spot in our back field at the nursery where we just dump the leaves and the small twigs and old grass and stuff like that. And over the years, they disintegrate and they decompose. And the next thing you know, it's the best nutritious black fluffy soil that you couldn't buy this stuff. It's too good to even buy. So That's one thing you can do with the rain. Say, hey, what's going on? How do I fix the drainage? And how do I start a compost pile? In the long run, you're going to be real pleased with what your results are. How much time we got?
Oh, probably about 3 minutes.
3 minutes. So I got a special announcement here I'm going to make.
Uh-oh. Here we go.
Yeah, it's kind of a change of subject, but not. We have sold our nursery and landscaping business as of last Friday. Wintergreen Nursery is now under new ownership, and the new owner is excited and has a great vision for the future. It's a lady, Jennifer Johnson is her name. She is a doer, and she's been out on several landscaping jobs with us, and she has actually laid sod at one project and planted plants at another project. She is very enthusiastic, very friendly, and very nice. Now, our landscape maintenance division will continue as usual with the nursery. There will no interruptions in service with the same experienced crew. And my wife and I will continue to help for about 6 months as part-timers, one or 2 days a week, something like that, and be giving guidance to the new owner. And the service and the quality of Wintergreen will be maintained as excellent as usual. So I thought I'd say that today and get it out before you read it somewhere else. But we appreciate all the clients that we've had over these last years. And I started in 1973 with a 56 Chevy pickup, a lawnmower, a rake, a shovel, and a rototiller. And we, together with my wife and crew, built what we have today. And I just want to say a hearty thanks to all my clients and all the help that I've gotten from them over all the years. So thank you.
Now we say thank you.
Yeah. And I'm going to continue this radio business for a while, too.
Are you? I was just going to ask you if you're going to stick around.
Yeah, I'll stick around for a while. I might take a little break and see what retirement is actually like.
Yeah.
And sit on the porch and count tree leaves or something. I don't know.
Can't blame you there.
No. And I'm not going to disappear off the face of the earth right now, I don't think. So, anyway, thank you for listening and thank you for your support. And it's been a good life.
So this is taking effect almost immediately? Or?
She's moving stuff in as we speak.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and we're moving stuff out as
Ouch.
We speak.
Well, Mike, I hope you continue for many moons here on the radio.
Well, maybe we can start start a different kind of show, boating on the on the river or something.
There you go. All right, we'll catch you next week, Mike.
Okay, thank you.